And then what we're gonna do is, we don't have a handheld mic, so you ask the question good and loud, and then Glenn, you're gonna have to repeat the question.
Very good.
But first, a comment, if you would, on Francis Schaeffer's artwork.
Yeah, it's interesting, because Dick mentioned this last night, and he knows, like my kids, but he didn't know, because I had not told him, that I have four daughters, as I said. I have one son, my dear beloved son. His name is Schaeffer. I named him after Francis Schaeffer, because Francis Schaeffer was so foundational in my Christian formation. He was a philosopher, and he taught the truth of Christianity by helping people understand philosophy and understanding art and going to scripture, but also going to nature and saying, look, the two things hold together. And his influence, Francis Schaeffer's influence, and unfortunately, he's much forgotten in the church today. He died in the early 80s. I mean, he hasn't been gone all that long, but his work is phenomenal. It's significant. It's important. Okay, so did we say we have a roving handheld or not?
We don't.
Okay, so we don't. So here's the deal. Ask your question, shout it out as loud as you can. I will repeat it. And as I always say, our teachers told us that there are no stupid questions, but guess what? There are stupid questions. And if you ask a stupid question, I will let you know that is a stupid question. Last night, we didn't have any stupid questions. We had about four questions. They were all really tremendously brilliant. And the person asking the question didn't know that they were brilliant, but people are brilliant. So have faith in the significance of the question that you want to ask, and it is likely that other people will want to ask the same question you're wanting to ask, but they don't have the boldness. So be bold.
All right. The only thing is stand up and ask a question. We probably would rather not have a dissertation, just a question. Go ahead. Whoever wants to stand up and ask a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Stand up, please.
I'll be brave and start first.
Good.
So you mentioned that the people that are involved in all of this are kind of like being used like pawns.
Yes.
I agree. And do you find in your travels, in your research, that do you ever have some detractors actually come to your talks and maybe express... you know, like some of the things they say are, you know, I was molested as a child,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera. You hear a lot of that.
Okay. I do. And I love that question. Okay, she is asking, and I think we could all hear it, but I just want to repeat it so that we have it. That we had talked about people being victims of gender ideology, and they are, you're right, and there are victims. And victims should elicit compassion from us, unmistakably, without reserve. But I want to say something else. And then she asked, do you have people coming up communicating that they are victims? And yes, I do. Like, they've been molested, they've been mistreated, they have been misunderstood, they are different, they feel themselves being different. But I want to say this very clearly as well. And this is very important for us to understand as we engage this issue. There are victims, true victims, who are caught up in the turmoil and the lie of this, and they are victims that deserve our compassion. But there are also people that are not victims. They know exactly what they're doing. Dylan Mulvaney, I do not think is a victim. I think he is selling a product, and he knows exact. TikTok is full of people who are not victims. They are selling a lie, and they're doing it persuasively, they're doing it aggressively, and they are targeting our children. And guess what? We can walk and chew gum. We can say, yes, there are evangelists in this new religion. There are people that are selling this lie. And we can be mindful and discerning about who those people are, and they must be denounced. But there are also victims. And those people deserve our compassion. How do you tell the difference between the two? That's a tough thing. But one of the main things is to listen to their heart. Do you hear a brokenness? I have met in the last 15 years kind of what I would call old school trans people, people that are genuinely gender dysphoric, who say, like, you know what, I was born a man, but I've always sensed myself a woman. And you can tell that they're speaking from a deep pain within them. Those people elicit my compassion, and they wear their heart on their sleeve. They are broken people, and you can see it. But they are very, 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 very rare. And just like that Eric Kaufman data, they're becoming more rare and rare all the time. Now we're having what we call ROGD, rapid onset gender dysphoria. Abigail Schreier, in her book, what's the title of her book? I'm putting Dick on the spot. But if you look up Abigail Schreier, she's talking about this new thing that is targeting our daughters. And it's targeting our daughters who say, I'm not really comfortable being a girl. Guess what? That has been the nature of girls throughout millennia. Our job is to come alongside them and say, you are the beautiful, strong, bold girl that nature, that God has created you to be. Believe in who you are. I had a woman last night, a lovely woman. I don't know how old she was. She was older. She's a well-established adult. She has a 30-year-old son. She had a masculine nature to her. As she stood, like she can hold her own anywhere. She works at a church. I asked her what she did at the church. She goes, I oversee facilities at a big church. She said they didn't want to hire me, but I said, yes, I know how to fix stuff. Okay? But she said, and she, like a lovely woman, but you could see a masculine nature about her that was undeniably a feminine woman. And she said, if I were growing up today, they would have put me on a fast track to trans me, put me on medicine, cut off my body parts, and I wouldn't have my son today. She said, I fear for the young girls today. It makes me angry. So she was a Christian who could feel anger and compassion at the same time. And that's what we need to do. That's what we need to know. So I hear that. There you go. Irreversible damage. The transgender craze seducing our daughters. Thank you very much. Is Abigail Schreier's
book. She's not a conservative.
She is a Jewish woman.
And we sell her book because it is so good.
It's interesting. Focus on the Family does not sell her book. Not because we don't agree with it necessarily, but she says, listen, I have no beef with homosexuality at all. My beef is with telling little girls that being a little girl is a bad thing to be, you know? And it's interesting, like for Focus on the Family, like we all at work talk about the book. Jim Daly talks about the book, but like, you know, and that's the interesting thing about this is we have very unlikely co-conspirators in this work who don't necessarily see the world like Kara Dansky, that book, The Progressive Feminist. Like, we don't agree with her on a lot of things, but we absolutely agree with her on that transgenderism and gender identity are not real things. And that's another thing that can give a lot of us great confidence. That this is not a conservative, Republican, Christian issue. This is a common sense, do we understand what the nature of reality is issue. And we will unapologetically stand under the truth that there is an objective meaning called womanhood and manhood, and we will not play the pronoun game, we will not play the noun, the name game, because those things are lies covering over that no, Bruce Jenner is not Caitlyn, he's Bruce. And we will never make him happy and content by going along with the lie that he is something else. So, that's a great, great question. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious.
Please stand.
I'm just wondering, is this a particularly United States problem? It seems to me this is a dysfunction that we brought upon ourselves. I'm just curious, what does Russia think of this? What does China think of this? What do the South Americans think of this? What does Africa think of this? It seems to be particularly focused on Europe and the United States, and it's like, have we gone crazy and the rest of the world thinks we're going crazy? Or I'm just curious.
Okay, so that's a great, great question. Is this a United States thing? Is it a Western world thing? Is it a universal thing? One of the things that I'm reminded of, and it's one of the things that I love about Matt Walsh's documentary, What is a Woman? He had the brilliant idea, I am going to go to a very primitive tribe in Africa. And the left likes to remind us, like, oh, no, no, go, let's go back to our tribal roots. Let's go back to nature as it is. And they ask these men, these tribal African men, what is binary? And they just laugh, and they're like, yeah, we've heard of non-binary. It's not a thing. There's only men and women. You know, like, no, this is not an original thing. So I get to travel around the world, and this is an American problem. It's a European problem, although England is starting to backtrack on trans and young kids. They are realizing France is backtracking on it, Denmark is backtracking on it, a number of European countries are backtracking on the idea of trans and kids physically and hormonally with drugs and things like that. But wherever I go in the world, China, Asia, Central America, South America, I am getting the question, where in the world did this come from? And I know many activists on the other side. I've been to their offices. I know what they do. I know what they're about. They didn't go to Southeast Asia and convince through TikTok and social media and things like that to, you know, young girls to say, I'm not. This is a spiritual conspiracy. And I say this often, I am not a charismatic. I am not an individual who says, yes, there's these vast spiritual forces behind whatever we may be seeing. But on this issue, I'm absolutely convinced. The other side is not that well organized. They are not that powerful. There are demonic forces utilizing social media, utilizing politics, utilizing academia to push these poisonous ideas across culture. And it is happening so vast and so quickly. And the only explanation that I can give you is a spiritual conspiracy. And even that soon sounds weird to my ears. But it's what I see. So, yes, ma'am. Yes.
Claiming that this was saving the life and making these people recognize that this kind of thing. For those of us that see this as a way to make more people who are being unable to see the reality
Yes.
And those of us that are on the other side, we're trying to counteract that. And one of the reasons why I came here is to be able to find how can I lead in letting people know that what he is saying, that this is the best for them, is not the best, because we're just making it worse, because we know factually the majority of these people have been misled.
Yes. Yes, very, very good. You articulated the absolute truth on this so well and so brilliantly. So first of all, I want to encourage you to have confidence in where you're coming from, because you're absolutely right. She, you heard it, and I'll just say it for the recording here. Her mayor declared just recently Pride Month for their city, and he said, this is going to save the lives of young people. That is a vicious, vicious, vicious lie. Because one, it's not true, and I'll explain to you why it's not true. And it's so manipulative. Because it puts you, who seeks to resist it, in the camp of wanting young people to die, which is vile. Vile. Way, way, way back when, before this was even a big issue, I got to be on the Dr. Phil show 2 times to discuss this issue. And they had up on the panel some moms who had trans kids. And Dr. Phil wanted to explain why this was wrong, but he had to be neutral. So he called Focus on the Family. I was the one that got to go be on the show to explain why this was wrong. And I explained why it was wrong, and the mother of a trans boy who thought he was a girl, and this is interesting, that it has changed primarily from little boys thinking they're girls to little girls not wanting to be boys. It used to be that, now it's a different thing. But the mom said, this man doesn't even understand what he's talking about. These kids will kill themselves if they are not affirmed. And the audience just applauds. This has been their talking point from the very beginning. And guess what? It is not true. That graph that I showed you from the Atlantic shows that it's not working. But here's the research. Communities, I mean, we have done nothing in America but moved in a pro-affirming direction. And the unhappiness data still goes up. The Netherlands, Denmark, Scandinavia, France, these are some of the most hyper gay-affirming, trans-affirming communities in the world. You cannot be more affirming than these communities are. There's data on trans suicide rates, post-operative trans suicide rates. After the affirmative medical care, there is nearly no change in the suicide rates. We would have to be light years more affirming than the Netherlands to even change any change whatsoever. So your mayor and mayors all over the country are giving this same explanation. Your city will never be more gay affirming than the Netherlands. And guess what? It has had no appreciable impact on reducing the suicide rate of trans individuals. This indicates there is something else at work. And even after they undergo surgery, even after they have gender-affirming, life-giving care. The suicide rates are still off the charts, and great academic research shows this to be the case. So it is a false promise, and it is manipulative. Now, what can you do? I want to tell you this. In my city of Colorado Springs, I live downtown. I can walk downtown to wonderful restaurants. There's only 3 restaurants in Colorado Springs that do not fly the rainbow trans flag. I will not go to those restaurants. And I was telling Dick this afternoon, I'm with you. I haven't done this yet, but I so want to go into these restaurants and I want to ask the manager, I love your restaurant. I love the hamburgers that you serve here. I love the tacos that you serve here. But that flag in the window tells me I am not welcome and I cannot come here. And I want the manager to say, tell me why that is. And I want to say, because I believe I'm a father of 4 daughters. I'm a father of a son. I believe in the objective reality of male and female. Male and female are not what we believe we are. It is what nature tells us we are. And your flag tells me that if I believe that, I am not welcome in your restaurant. And I hate that.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
You know, when you were talking about Solzhenitsyn, we must stand and not live by lies. What Glenn has just told you, if you want a practical thing that you can do, think about it, rehearse it, do it with grace, but tell the people, and don't notice that he did not come from a Christian perspective. Because that's a turnoff for a lot of people. He came from a reality, and that's what the Bible is. Thank you.
Okay, so let me say this. If I were to say that to the restaurant manager, what do you think he would say? Say it a little, no? Say it a little louder.
We don't want your business then.
I agree with you, but I think he would say, that's not what that flag says. That flag says we welcome all people. See, most people do not even know what they're really agreeing with. They're like, that flag just means everybody's welcome. No, sir, that flag, ask lesbians. See the triangle part of that flag? That pink and blue triangle part is the trans part. Tell me what lesbians think about men dressing as women, coming to their lesbian bars and chatting them up. Think about the trans thing. Wow, I've never thought about that. Well, you should, because that's what your flag represents. You think this is this whole cohesive thing that brings everything together, but that part of your flag says that objective womanhood does not exist. It tells my little girl, my girls, they're not little, but it tells my girls that womanhood is only something that is performative, that Judith Butler tells us. And I can't go along with that. Basically, what you've got to do is remind these people, we are living under the illusion that the rainbow flag is just, no, everybody getting along, and we're saving kids' lives. We're not saving kids' lives. The flag does not cohere. It does not connect with what we know to be reality. See that woman behind your counter? She's a woman. She's a fantastic woman. I celebrate her womanhood, her dreams, her desires as a woman. That flag denies that. And you need to come to terms with that flag flying in your window and knowing fully what it represents. And I believe in the realness of womanhood. I believe in the realness of manhood. And your flag tells me I'm not welcome. You need to take a second look at why you have that flag in your window. You know? And we need to start those conversations. And we need to start challenging the lies behind these sorts of things and to do it in different ways. And so your question is, like, what can you do? I think it goes back to what Dick is saying, is like, stop adopting the lies and say, I refuse to parrot the lies that you're wanting us. And think of creative ways that you can stand against those things. There's actually, I saw a video. She is just, and maybe we can find it, but it's this completely secular woman who gives the best example of why she refuses to use preferred gender pronouns. And she just says, because it's contrary to what I know reality to be. And I'm like, why can't Christians come up with the reasons that she just simply laid out? And there's good people online who are making these cases. So I've kind of given you some examples, but the other is, they mean to confuse us. And we've got to think ourselves, how do we get behind that and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to play your game. Other questions? Yes, sir, in the back.
Isn't there historical evidence saying that throughout all history, like Sodom and Gomorrah and Pompeii, even Rome, that when the society has gotten to this point, it's been completely wiped out?
Yes. And we can kind of be fast and loose and casual with statements like that. But here's what it is. There is no society anywhere that went in a revolutionarily sexual direction and continued to thrive. And the thing that I say to anybody is, show it to me. Show it to me. And we can see it in our country. We can see it in our own country. We are moving in this direction and we are starting to break down. It's shown in the data of how happy our kids are. Okay? And there is no, I mean, the other thing is there is no country that has ever survived that says sexuality can take place anywhere people choose for it to take place and that marriage really doesn't matter. That countries, civilizations are sustained on the idea of monogamy and marriage and fidelity. And Pitram Sorokin, he was the guy that founded the sociology department at Harvard in the early 50s and 60s. He wrote a book called The Sexual Revolution. He wrote it in 1967. And he cataloged and he laid out that when you separate sex from marriage, when you separate sex from the protective confines of one man and one woman, that women become objectified, that women become impoverished, that children tend not to do so well. And we have seen this in this country. And liberal scholars will tell you that. So yes, I mean, it's a sophisticated point. But there's plenty of data to show it. And it can simply be demonstrated by, show me the sexual libertine culture that continues to thrive. There is none that exists in human experience. So that's a great, great question. And yes, you are right. Yes, ma'am.
I guess one thing, I don't know if it's really a question or it's where you stand on it, but you talked about a spiritual component. And just seeing Satan above that picture with Adam and Eve.
Yes.
There again, he lurks. My question, I guess, or my thought is, when to me, it seems like he became dissatisfied with who God created him to be at some point. And it even talks about in Scripture how he says, why are you mindful of man? You know, close to this dissertation, and I should know which psalm or whichever one it is, but I can't say off the top of my head. So I guess my wonderment to you is, you know, to me, it seems like, you know, the enemy, he's just very clever, you know. He was dissatisfied with his identity and who God created him to be, because he wanted to be, you know, the image of God, and male, you know, as God created.
Yes, yes.
And so, to me, we see this twisting and turning of this whole identity issue, and how we're destroying ourselves just because we can't even understand who we are now in something that was not very long ago basic of what, when you opened your diaper, what you were.
Right.
You know, and I'm just curious about, because if we go and we talk about that portion, I mean, aside from the nature portion, then we're looked at as, you wicked Christian, you're out of there.
Right, right. Yeah, you used a very critical word that I want to highlight, and you said, it seems to come down to the issue of identity. Who are you?
Yes.
And Satan was not satisfied. He was an angel. He had authority in heaven, but he wanted to be something else. Now, Scripture is not really clear about that. You know, we don't know what happened, but we do know that he was dissatisfied with his place that God had given him, and he wanted to be something else. Isn't that the very foundation of what we are looking at today? In a very, very profound way. And that's important. And so we need to understand that it is identity, and identity matters. And the identity that God gives us as humans, made in his image, as male and female. We need to encourage our young people today. You are a male. That's why I wrote the book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. To be confident and secure in the femininity that God gave you. The masculinity that God gave you. But what I talk about in my book is, I wanted the book to be entitled Beyond Pink and Blue. That you're a little boy, but you don't like sports. You like the arts. You're more intellectual. You're a great little boy. Even though you don't like to sweat and get dirty and blow things up like other boys, it doesn't mean that you're not a boy. It means you're a different kind of boy. Little girls, the woman that I talked to last night, she oversees facilities for a church. I can fix anything, and I'm better than any man at doing it. Doesn't mean she's a dude. It means she's a unique, powerful, influential kind of woman. Be that identity. And Satan originally challenged that, and he's continuing to challenge it today. And God's ideal and God's design is, be who I created you to be.
Yes.
And the other thing that you talked about in the diaper, you know, you see, like, medical doctors say, comes out of the womb, they see something, it's a boy. But now we don't call that a medical diagnosis, we call it assigning. You were assigned male at birth. That's a lie. Your maleness was confirmed at birth. Your femaleness was confirmed at birth. Medical science, that's how it operates. I think I'm done.
We've got time for one more quick question and one quick answer, and this lady is the last lady. A question, please.
Yes, a question. So, our schools, colleges, and our lower education schools are teaching this religion, whatever you want to call it. And it is out there, it's prolific, it's in our libraries, the books, and all of it. So I guess the question is, how do we combat that? I mean, I have my ideas. We need people to change people on the school boards. It has to do with legislature. It has to do with all of these areas that have governance over it. But it's what they're learning, and then the parents are going along with it.
Yeah. They're being bullied. Mm-hmm.
They are being bullied. And I have talked to young girls who are transitioning, and they are clueless as to what's going to happen to their body. And I said, do you know that you probably will not be able to have children? No.
Do you know that you will probably never have sexual function?
No.
Right?
Yep. So anyway, how do we as lay people just, address these issues in our communities and in our, just our local dealings?
Okay, so first of all, you were so right. You said it's happening in our schools, it's happening in our medical communities, it's happening here. There's a term for that. It's called ideological capture. That the professions have been absolutely ideologically captured by this ism. And you are not allowed to disagree with it. Whenever you see something, a question that you're not allowed to disagree with, be super suspicious of that. I think that's where you start. I think that's where you start. At this school, we are called to ask big questions about reality. But there is something that we are not allowed to question, and it's gender ideology. And when we are not allowed to question something, that should get our attention. Appeal to, that. The other thing is, and I love this, and there are a bunch of, and there need to be more of, parents going to school board meetings, and it's usually dads. You have this book, Gender Queer, in your library. Let me read to you from this book. And he starts reading stuff that the school board is like, I'm sorry, sir, you can't say that here. But our kids can read it? I'm sorry, I'm reading it. And you're going to listen to it. It's here's the thing. And I know you're looking for, what can we do? And it's hard to, do A, B, and C. But here's A, B, and C. Find ways to push back on what they're trying to push on you. They think they're open-minded. They think that let's be open. No, there are things that I cannot say in this meeting, and I'm going to say them at this meeting. Push back on these kinds of things. Show them the kinds of books that are being put in our kids' schools. And do not apologize for reading them. And I think what we need to do is we need to sit down person to person. Go to your library and say, is this a good book to have in this library? Yes, we have determined that there are kids who are represented by this book. Oh, well then, are you comfortable with this, with this, with this? Oh my goodness, I didn't know that was in that book. No, you didn't. It is.
So just one thing, I have done some of those things that you said, and you don't get very far.
Right. Because of the ideological capture.
But that's okay, and my point is that we plant a seed, and you just have to be bold, and you have to state the fact, and then let it be where it's gonna lie. But if we don't say those things, nothing's going to change.
But here's another thing that you do as well. You're respectful. You're thoughtful. You've done your homework. And then you ask, okay, we got nowhere today, but can we continue this conversation? Can you and I, as advocates for our children, continue this conversation? And that forces them to say, no, I have nothing to, I have nothing in common with you. Wow, I thought you were about inclusion. I feel very excluded. And that's the planting the seed too. Reveal to them that they are the fundamentalists, that they are the ones that are saying, you know what, we're not going to discuss this. Oh, how open-minded of you. How classically liberal of you, you know? And I think that's what we need to do. We need to hold a mirror up to them and say, let me show you the kind of individual that you are. So.
One of the basic things that I should tell you why we exist. We exist to equip believers to speak well. That's why we exist. If you're not a reader, or if you're not listening to books, if you think you're gonna just wing it, I challenge you to be equipped to know what you believe. Not just from the scriptures, but from really good literature. So thank you for coming. It's a privilege to be here. If you can help us pay for this and write us a check or help us pay for this, that would be good. Blessings to you. Thank you for coming.